Lake Effect continues now on WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Mitch Teich. Public health statistics show that as much as 20% of the U.S. population will deal with clinical depression at some point in their lives, making it one of the most common mental health disorders. Even if you don't suffer from it, there is a good chance that a friend or family member will be affected.
But despite its prevalence, depression can still carry a stigma, like other mental illnesses, and that often stops people from seeking help. Researchers at Wisconsin's Rogers Behavioral Health are working to alleviate that problem through developing a mobile application that can help treat a patient's depressive symptoms. It's a similar app to one health researchers there tested to treat obsessive-compulsive disorder.
Dr. Jerry Halverson is chief medical officer at Rogers Behavioral Health, and Dr. Brad Riemann is chief clinical officer and clinical director of the Rogers OCD Center. They joined Lake Effect's Audrey Nowakowski to talk about this latest study and how an app could revolutionize current treatment. Dr. Halverson starts by explaining the basic background and prevalence of depression.
It's certainly not a new diagnosis. Historically, like way historically, there have been thoughts that, you know, depression is caused by spirits or bad fluid in your system. I would say over the past 40 or 50 years, though, the concept and construct of the diagnosis of depression has been pretty consistent. As far as when it started to get diagnosed more frequently, that has really gone hand in hand with stigma. Oftentimes, people have been hesitant to seek help for depression. Depression historically had been looked at as a weakness, as something that you don't talk about. And I would say that has really made a big change over the past 10 to 15 years. When I started in psychiatry 15 years ago, we started having people that would seek out treatment for the depression a little bit more easily. We're still at a point where people are accepting of that treatment, but oftentimes it's at the behest of family and friends and loved ones. But a lot of that is hand in hand with stigma. Stigma continues to be a significant barrier to people getting the treatment that they need, and that's why it's important to be able to talk about depression in settings like this.
Well, and especially, as you say, if it's so prevalent that one in five people will experience depression at some point in their life, you'd think that people would make more of an effort to have more conversations about it since it affects so many people.
Absolutely. And again, that's why we're here, because it is common. And unfortunately, there are certain pockets, certain age groups, certain places where it's still difficult to have this conversation. But the more that we have the conversation, the easier the conversation is to have.
Exactly. Now, with you, Dr. Brad, you came on earlier to talk about an OCD application, and now this is for depression. So could you start with explaining the basics of how this application works for patients with depression?
Sure. You know, basically, individuals with depression, you know, really kind of describe having this kind of black cloud that follows them. And this black cloud tends to kind of direct their interpretations of the things around them, their life, as negative, unfortunately. And of course, perceiving things as being negative tends to lead to more depression and then more of this kind of bias in their interpretation of negativity. And it just becomes this very vicious kind of cycle. And so people look at this interpretation bias, as it's called, as really potentially a psychological risk factor for depression. The app really is designed to train people to kind of reinterpret their world in a more positive way, but I think just as importantly, in a more accurate way. And the classic example is your glass half empty or half full? And people who are depressed, again, tend to look at their glass as half empty. This app really works, again, to retrain people to kind of look at the world differently, to kind of flip that coin over and see that there are two sides to these stories and see that their glass is half full.
So how does it do that exactly? Is it word prompts similar to the OCD study?
Yeah, that's a great question. So in anxiety disorders, including like things like obsessive compulsive disorder, we really focus in on a different kind of bias, this attention bias. And in there, we're looking at, as you mentioned, word prompts and retraining their attention. For depression, we actually use sentences. These sentences are by design vague or vague enough that they're open to interpretation. Someone who is depressed, unfortunately, kind of naturally interprets these vague sentences as negative. And through feedback that we give them, questions that we ask them about these sentences and their responses, we give them feedback on that. in a relatively short period of time. It takes about 20 minutes to complete the app. We ask people to do it twice a week for 4 weeks, so it takes about a month. Over that relatively short period of time, people begin to retrain their interpretation, looking at the world differently. And the great thing is that results in a lowering and reduction of depressive symptoms.
Now, how has depression been treated traditionally?
So we have many effective treatments for depression. You know, we're not doing this because we don't feel that there are effective treatments, but there, as we'll talk about, this would be very unique and could supplement what we're doing right now. Historically, depression has been treated with medication and psychotherapy. There are specific types of medications that tend to be the most beneficial, and there are specific types of psychotherapies that also tend to be most beneficial. As far as medications go, we have medications that work. Oftentimes, they can have some side effects. Usually things like weight gain or being tired can be a side effect with some of the medications, but that has been the backbone to psychiatric treatment of depression. But we also have evidence-based psychotherapies, particularly over the past 10 years. We've learned more about specific types of psychotherapies like cognitive behavioral therapy, also an offshoot of that, behavioral activation, interpersonal therapy. There are other specific types of therapy that we know work with depression. And we've actually gotten to the point where we can combine the medications and the therapy, and we have even better outcomes that way.
Now, Dr. Riemann, with the OCD study that's been in the process for a little while with participants, was there anything you learned in that round of the application, either things that were a success or things that didn't work that influenced how you constructed the app for depression?
Yeah. So we're still working on the OCD studies, but we're really kind of close to shutting a couple of those down. You know, I think the most important thing that we learned and one of the real questions that we had was kind of shrinking the software presentation from a typical desktop, you know, monitor kind of size. You know, the real question is you know, by shrinking it to an app and putting it on a phone or in a handheld, you know, by changing the size of the presentation, you know, might that matter? And the good news is we're very near data completion, and looking at the data, the app has worked. So the moral of the story is shrinking it down on a phone has not somehow disconnected its effectiveness. And of course, this is huge because just about everybody has smartphones these days. Everybody has access to these kinds of things. As Dr. Halvorsen was saying, there's very effective treatment for OCD and depression, but not everybody has geographic access to it. Not everybody has financial access to it. And so by ultimately, you know, putting something on an app, on a phone, where people could ultimately do it in the privacy of their own home, at their convenience, and presumably at a much lower cost, that's a real win situation. And I think we envision this as really kind of working in two ways. This, again, could augment already effective treatment that we have, medication treatment, cognitive behavior therapy, or the combination. This might be a third element to put into that mix. For people who have access to that kind of care. But this could also be a freestanding, standalone treatment. But the biggest thing we learned is that by shrinking it, it still works.
We were discussing stigma earlier, Dr. Halvorsen. And do you think that people would typically be more receptive to going to an app versus going out of their way to see a psychotherapist or to go on medication if that's not an easily accessible option?
Yeah, I think that's one of the true benefits of possibly being able to do this. I think, you know, if you go to the App Store right now, there are a lot of applications that talk about treatment of depression, and there is that convenience piece there, and with the stigma, and frankly, folks that have depression are going to be less likely to seek out help unless there's family or someone encouraging them to do it. So making it easy to access treatment that has research and evidence base behind it is, as Dr. Riemann was saying, is a win-win situation, because we know there are a lot of people out there that are dealing with depression. Even if their families and friends have identified it and are encouraging them to get help, they just still don't get help, again, due to the depression. And we generally don't force people to get help until they're, you know, an actual danger to themselves. But 99.9% of patients people that are dealing with this aren't at that level. But if we have treatment that is effective and evidence-based and easy to access, that could really revolutionize treatment.
You mentioned basing this off of evidence, and I'm curious, how does a computer program or an application take people's feelings and experiences and emotions, and with a thing like depression where that can be a range of, you know, 1 to 10, you know, how does that turn into quantitative data?
Yeah, so I mean, that's a great question. You know, there's a couple of things that we're looking at, really. We certainly assess levels of depression, the degree of depression, the severity of depression before someone would start the study. We monitor it at each visit and then at the end of treatment. And of course, what we're looking for is change. The issue, the other thing that we can measure is this level of bias. So we can look at in the case of the depression study, the number of sentences that they interpret negatively at the beginning and simply compare it to the number of sentences that they're interpreting negatively at the end. And of course, what we want to see is a large reduction. And so the app doesn't really get at kind of the emotions of depression directly. It's really targeting this bias in interpretation. It's really targeting that my glass is half empty kind of issue, that black cloud kind of issue. And by shutting that down, or at least weakening it to a significant degree, that results in then the depression symptom reduction that we see. So, I mean, that's really what we're measuring, and that's what we're seeing this progress in.
This is really based on cognitive behavioral therapy techniques and what works, identifying these what we call distortions, and as Dr. Riemann is calling it, this bias towards negativity. And your psychotherapist, if you're able to get to your psychotherapist an hour a week or a couple hours a week, are able to effectively help with this, but this would be a way, particularly for those that might not have access to that, or extra practice on helping people to identify, first being aware that they do this. Folks with depression automatically do this. They're not always aware of it. Helping to build awareness of what your depression is causing. And then once you're identifying it, you're able to hopefully have a little bit of pliability and change those thoughts.
So to get into the nitty-gritty here of getting involved in this process, does a patient need to be diagnosed with depression first in order to enroll in this?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the first step would be, you know, to contact our research labs. There is a screen that can be done over the phone, you know, that can go a long way to kind of looking at whether someone kind of is clinically depressed, meets criterion for the study. But then the big step is there is an evaluation that is done by a trained professional to kind of determine whether someone is indeed clinically depressed or not. That can take a couple of hours. If someone is deemed depressed and appropriate for the study, then people come in, as I mentioned, twice a week. The app itself only takes about 20 minutes, but there's another roughly 30 or 40 minutes each time someone comes in that we collect the measures, measuring their depression levels and so forth. So they come in twice a week for 4 weeks, and they are reimbursed for their time. So they're actually paid for that. This research has been generously supported by donors, people that believe in technology and that technology can improve treatment and can improve access to treatment. And so yes, there is an evaluation done to determine whether someone is depressed or not.
So the evaluation will not only attempt to make the diagnosis of depression or see if you're dealing with depression, but it will also triage severity. If we have somebody who is very, very depressed or actively suicidal, we would encourage them to get active treatment
yes.
right now
yes.
versus going through this at this time.
Yeah.
You know, it's important that we you know, we're not saying, you know, stop your other treatment. This is something that can be added on your other treatment if you're depressed. And this seems like a way for you to be able to access treatment that you wouldn't otherwise access. Sure, give it a try. But again, we have effective treatments that can help you right now that are evidence-based and proven that we would encourage you to go to.
Yeah, and Dr. Halverson's right. I mean, you know, given the severity, we may actually encourage them to go, you know, a different route than the study. But this is kind of one of the unique pieces of this study. Many clinical treatment studies require you not to be receiving any kind of treatment. We actually encourage people to stay in the treatment that they're receiving. That will not interfere with what we're doing. And on the flip side, if someone comes to us and we find that they're not depressed but maybe suffering from some other kind of form of a behavioral health issue, we will try to do our best to direct them to a resource that can help them with whatever problem they're having.
So it's not simply a self-diagnosis and self-treatment at the touch of your phone.
Not currently. I mean, in other words, you know, again, just like in the OCD study, we have to make sure that this app works. And if the app works, and so far the results are very promising, certainly in the future, maybe someone would be self-diagnosing and utilizing something like this to improve their life.
So overall, besides being able to get this app to a point where someone can go to it directly without going through a clinical screening, what is the larger goal here in dealing with depression among the American population?
I think part of our goal is to come up with more ways to provide access to effective treatment. If there is a way that we can come up with a unique, effective way that people could get treatment without having to drive 5 hours, without having to wait 2 months, then that's really our goal.
There's been some recent news articles in the Milwaukee paper about the shortage of mental health providers in the state of Wisconsin. I believe we're ranked like 30th in the nation of mental health providers per capita. That's a real problem. And taking a look at things like depression or anxiety disorders, they're so common. We don't have enough providers. And the thought is, how do we utilize technology? How do we apply technology to increase access to care, as Dr. Halverson said, and hopefully reduce cost? And the stigma piece, too, like you mentioned, Dr. Halverson, young people are very used to using technology. I mean, they basically use their phones for everything, music, communicating with their friends, entertainment, news. And so I think it's going to be quite natural for that generation to turn to their phone for health, whether it's physical or mental health issues. I think it's just going to be a very natural transition. There's evidence to suggest that people are comfortable disclosing things to machines that they're not as comfortable disclosing to human beings. Interestingly, again, that's stigma. And we're certainly trying to reduce stigma. I think we've come a long way, but we've got a long way to go. And if there's a young person who might be inclined to do something like this, who's refusing, say, for example, to go see a psychiatrist or something, then that's a good thing. Or, again, using in conjunction with that kind of treatment.
Well, Dr. Jerry Halverson and Dr. Brad Riemann, thank you both so much for coming in to talk about it today.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. My pleasure.
Dr. Jerry Halverson and Dr. Brad Riemann of Rogers Behavioral Health joined Audrey Nowakowski in the studio to talk about the Depression Application Research Study. To learn more about the app and how to sign up for the study, please go to WUWM.com.